The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is no substitute for professional care by your doctor or your qualified healthcare professional. Never disregard or delay professional medical advice because of something you've heard on this podcast or in any linked material. Guests who speak on this podcast express their own opinions, experience, and conclusions. Dr. Shirley neither endorses nor opposes any particular opinion discussed on this podcast. The views expressed on this podcast have no relation to those of any academic, hospital, practice, institution, or other entity with which Dr. Shirley may be affiliated.
Welcome to Forever Fab, the podcast on fashion, the art of living, and all things beauty. This podcast is curated by Dr. Shirley Madeer, MD, as the definitive source of holistic wellness through beauty.
Said that word, and I know I didn't pronounce it correctly, but my brain immediately went to Cujo, the movie. Wasn't it about some crazy dog in the wilderness?
I believe it was, yeah.
But okay, so basically, words in different languages not only have different meanings, but they also have different contexts, right? It isn't just the word, to your point. It isn't the dog, you know, Lassie or your favorite multi-poo. It has this context. It's a specific kind of Hungarian dog or Russian dog in the woods that's going to tear you up. So tell me about your invention, right? You created a particular method for learning languages. So what is the basis of that method to allow all these different variables, the facility to be able to learn this language through your method?
So originally the method was just, I went to some immersion programs that basically forbade you to speak English. They were like, day one, you're not allowed to speak English, go. And these are where all my, you know, great positive and traumatic experiences are with language initially.
Yes.
And they were missing the memorization part. And I saw everyone else did the memorization part using these flashcard systems. And I was like, how do I combine them? So that was the version one of this was just, if I had a flashcard thing that was magical, which these are, how would I use that if I never used English? And that's it. That was the whole solution in version one of that solution. That's it. And so it's just, I'm going to make flashcards and I'm going to look up each word in Google Images. And I'm going to see what Cujo looks like. And I'm going to put that in. And specifically, I'm going to look for what makes that different. So as soon as I see all the Google Images results, I'm like, oh, that's a weird breed. I wouldn't choose that one. It's not a bunch of golden retrievers like dog is. So I'm going to take Cujo, I'm going to stick that on a flashcard, and I'm going to go. And so I learned all my simple words that way. Once I had enough simple words, I started doing fill in the blanks with sentences, and still no English, never English. And I built out a language that way. Over time, like I learned French that way, then I learned Russian that way, then I got my book deal, and I was like, you know what, let me start over and do this from scratch with Hungarian, because it's not related to anything, so this is going to be my dry run. And at that point, then things started getting refined of being like, you know what, this sound thing is really important.
Yeah.
Let's actually do minimal pair training. Let's not tell people go get an opera degree. Like that's not a shortcut. And so let's give people solid minimal pair training and start there. Then let's learn some simple words using these kind of Google image idea. And then let's step them up to fill in the blank sentences. That's how that kind of got released. That's how things were maybe like 5 or 6 years ago. And then I would say over the last 5 or 6 years, I've kind of been altering it over time to become a lot more personal. The idea of, can you bring in a native speaker and make it so I'm not learning some random sentence about, you know, the dog chased the cat, but rather like, my dog's name is Norbert and he's insta-famous. How do I say that in German?
Yeah.
And can I have a sentence where I learn Instagram and famous and dog from that sentence that is about my own life? And so how do you take native speaker content and dump it into flashcards and make that super personalized? So that's been kind of the gradual evolution of the set of products that have taken over my life for the last decade or so.
Good for you. Well, who is your book for?
My book is for people who are actually interested in doing the work but don't know how to apply that work. The idea of I'm going to France in 2 weeks.
Yes.
Don't get my book for that. I mean, that's you got 2 weeks. Go get a phrase book. Get Pimsleur, actually. Like Pimsleur Audio, in terms of this idea of, can I memorize a few phrases and get by? Great. they use the spaced repetition thing that all these flashcards are doing. Like that's their whole claim to fame, is that they use the great technology for memorization and they use it for translations. And when you got 2 weeks, translations are the right way to go. But if you have 6 months, if you've always dreamed of speaking French, if you want to do this Alzheimer's thing, like if you really want to change who you are in some manner.
And change your brain for the better.
And change your brain for the better. Then you should get my book. Like there's no reason to waste time on translation-based tools or things like that. Like it's a fun read. There's a reason why it turned into a bestseller. Like it's a good read. And it will teach you why it didn't work before. Like everyone has failed at this thing. It's like part of the human experience is to take a language for years and be like, I'm dumb. Like that's the thing we do. I got a good 12 years of that. I did Hebrew school in elementary school and then junior high. And so I had 7 years of failed Hebrew and 5.5 years of failed Russian. Like, that failure experience is the thing we all have done because we all didn't know how to do this thing. But it's not because we're not gifted. It's not like humans are really good at picking up language. It actually turns out we're better than kids at picking up language. That's a huge myth. Yeah, this idea that kids are great at languages is actually just like, there's no data to support it. There's a lot of data to support the opposite. Kids are kind of bad at learning because they're young and they don't know how to learn. And the thing that kids have is time. Yeah. Like they're learning a language 15 hours a day. Yeah. You're learning a language 30 minutes a week sometimes. And you're like, why aren't I good as this 5-year-old? And you're like, well, they put 10,000 hours in and you've put 100 hours in. And well,
that's right.
Those aren't the same number.
Yeah, the work is the 10,000 hours. So your book is called Fluent Forever, How to Learn Any Language Fast and Never Forget It. And it's available on Amazon. Is that right?
It is indeed.
Now, is your app same? Is it also called Fluent Forever, your app?
The app is also called Fluent Forever, yeah.
Okay. And the app, we can find it on Apple, on Google, on all that stuff, right?
You can find that on all the things, yes.
On all the things. Okay. A couple other questions. You wrote in a blog, maybe it was last year, that English is a very hard language to learn. Why is that? Because in my mind, English seems like it's pretty easy.
English is a language that has been, it's such a mutt. It's picked up so much from so many languages at such different times. There's a set of vocabulary in English that was pulled in from French, and then there was a separate set of language that was pulled in from Latin. And they're almost the same, but slightly different. And like, there's just all these pieces where like rules to those words don't work in the same way as the French ones do. There are, you know, what's the plural of octopus? Like,
yeah.
there's like, well, which one did it come from? Like, there's arguments that it should be octopodes. Like, just there's, English is a mess of a language. The spelling system has nothing to do with the pronunciation system, or at least it's brutally hard. Like, English, I had to eventually build a English pronunciation deck, like, to teach the ear training part and the connection to spelling. And, like, you need to put in maybe 80 different spelling rules. You know, where, you know, why is it that it's, you know, cats with a S at the end, but why is it dogs with a Z at the end? Mm. Why is that as, right. You know, it's not in German, like it would be dogs in German.
Right. Right.
That's how that ending would end up. So like a brutal sound system, a kind of randomized grammar system, a kind of randomized like vocabulary system, those things make it hard. The thing that makes English easy is that everyone is immersed in it all the time.
Yeah.
All media is done in English first. Like it's just people get bathed in it.
Right.
And so in terms of successful language learning outcomes, people learn English better than any language, even if it takes them a long time, because they want to watch TV. And so
it's everywhere.
So English, like in terms of like success cases of language, you can look through Europe and you will find that almost everyone has succeeded at learning English.
Yeah.
It's a good like testament to the fact that adults can learn language.
Right.
But yeah, it's not an easy language by any stretch of the imagination. It's a hard one.
Right. This is true. So then let's flip it. What would you say would be one of the easier languages to learn for native English speakers?
So the Romance languages, and in particular, like French, frankly, is one of the easiest ones. There is a constructed language, Esperanto, that will take you half as long as French. Mm-hmm. And some people use it as a kind of like bridge language where they'll once you learn one language, it's easier to learn a second one. And so some people will just be like, you know what, I'm going to learn Esperanto and I'm going to go hang out with all the Esperanto speakers in the world. Like there's usually little enclaves of them in every country and you can kind of make a little weird hobby about it. But if you're going to talk about the standard languages that are spoken, French is one of the easiest for English learners to learn. Spanish is a teeny bit harder. I think it's like 10 to 15% harder.
Interesting. I would have not guessed that you would have said French. Because I grew up speaking French. It was actually my first language, and then that something happened and I stopped speaking French, and now I barely speak French. And I just always remember when I did go to France and try to speak and learn and having been immersed, it's like, okay, I know a few words, I know a few grammar. I was always getting corrected by the French, not on the word necessarily, not even on the pronunciation, but on the grammar, the, you know, the past participle thing, like what happened. I was like, wait a minute. So interesting that French is one of the easiest ones. Okay, maybe I'll go back to it.
I mean, that's about the language itself. It's not necessarily about the culture around it. The French guard their languages very, very carefully. If you go into Mexico and you start speaking Spanish, you'll be treated a lot better for your like with grammar mistakes than the French will.
Well, don't the French have like this academy? I don't know the exact translation or name is, but it's something that has to do with the academy of preserving the French language in the original form type of thing.
Yes. No, the French love their language in a way that is unique in the world. It's pretty pretty special how much they like they just have a lot of pride in their language in a way that other people are like, screw it. Just say some stuff. It's fine.
I think it's actually pretty cool. Okay, well, we're down to the last few questions, and this is going to be a series of fives, right? So your five this. Okay, so the first one in this very small series is, what are your top five fluency tips?
Learn ear training first. Avoid translation. Use spaced repetition, whether that be flashcards or computerized, whatever. Learn using frequency lists. The word mother is used a good like 50 times more than aunt. Mm-hmm. Why are you learning the word aunt?
Okay.
Don't do that. Just learn words that you use all the time. Do that first.
Okay.
So frequency lists, huge, huge, huge thing. I want to get one more. What should it be?
So you said learn ear training first, avoid translation.
Ear training first. Mm-hmm. Yep. No translation, use spaced repetition, use frequency lists.
Yep. And last one.
We'll go with taboo. Do you remember this board game called Taboo, this party game?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So for any of your listeners who haven't played Taboo, the basic idea is you get a card. It says like baseball on the top. You need to get your team to say baseball. But on that card, it says diamond, sport, bat, and whatever, something else, Dodgers. And you're not allowed to use any of the words in that card to describe this thing. And so you're like, okay, so everyone, it's this, game, and you hit a sphere with a stick, and you go around in a square, and you run from square to square, and you get points if you get all the way back to the first square. People are like, baseball? And you go.
Right.
And so it's just this like silly party game is this idea, and it's fun and whatever.
Yes.
Taboo is literally frequency fluency training.
Huh.
When people say, I want to be fluent, there's actually no good definition of fluency. Fluent means I feel good.
Right.
And someone can feel good with 10 words. I've met them. There's people like the 50 words maybe, but like I've met a Spanish speaker who's just like, he just yammers away at the things he says, and he knows a few things. He's like, my name is this, I do this. That's all the Spanish I need. I have a pulmonologist friend who she has basically like all of her patients are intubated. Yeah. They can say yes and no.
True.
So the listening comprehension stuff she needs is none. She just needs someone who can nod and shake their head no.
Right.
And so she knows the 5 to 10 questions she needs to ask a patient.
Yes.
In maybe 10 languages.
Yeah.
She's fluent in 10 languages.
True.
That's all the fluency she needs. She is completely fluent in those 10 languages for her purposes. But someone else is going to be able to like, read, you know, deep classics in a language and they're just anxious people. And so they're not going to feel comfortable. That person's not fluent because they just don't feel that way. But fluency is a matter of, can you jump around the words you don't know to still say the thing you want to say? And that is the game of taboo. And so when you are with native speakers, you have the option of forcing them to play taboo with you. Or you're trying to say, hey, like, we're recording. Yesterday I recorded this. I was with this person and they were recording me on my computer. And we talked. It was just audio. We talked this thing. And then the audio goes out to all these people. And so I was recording this audio thing. You know the thing. Anyway, and we were saying this thing. And I had a great time and we had a great conversation and lots of people will listen to it on the internet. And that native speaker is going to be like, was that a podcast that you did? And you're like, yeah, that thing, that whatever. Anyway, yeah. Let's keep going. And that's fluency. It's not that you know every word and you never get tripped up. It's that you're able to get your point across. Yeah. And so people will be tempted when they're with a native speaker to jump into English. Every time they run out of a word and they're like, hey, I'm saying this thing, but like, what's the word for podcast? Podcast. Anyway, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And if you avoid that temptation, if you force everyone to play taboo with you, then every one of those moments where you don't know a word is a moment where you've just got to practice fluency, the real skill of fluency. Right. And if you treat it like a game, if you say, hey, like, actually, the thing I want to do with language learning is not memorize every possible word, but actually just get really good at this party game.
That's right.
Then dealing with native speakers becomes a lot less scary and you learn a lot more.
Yeah. And it's not as intimidating.
That. And it's you realizing like every moment that you've forgotten something is actually the best learning you're going to have all day. And it kind of reframes this idea of, oh no, I didn't get a word. I must be bad at this language too. Like,
right.
Oh cool. I found another hole in my language. Now I get to practice this thing. And so I feel like that reframe makes native speakers a lot less scary and makes you improve a lot faster.
Yeah, I agree that reframe is an opportunity actually to expound upon what you do know and get around what you don't know, but still arrive at the same conclusion. So thank you for redefining that. I think that's pretty genius actually. Okay, the next five questions. What are the most important? What are the most important? Or the five most important words that one should learn in any language? So if you're learning a new language, What are the five words that if you're just going to know five words, these are the ones.
Okay. Can they be phrases or do they need to be words?
Sure.
All right. Phrases. Cool. What's that?
Yeah. What was that?
What's that? Super useful. You can use that all day long. Just point at things and be like, what's that?
Yep.
What's that? What's this? What's that? What's that? Never stop that. It's super, super useful. The next one I kind of love is like most of these are going to be actually taboo strategies. One of the things actually that's fun about taboo as a concept is like no one's really sat down and analyzed it for strategy in the way that they've done like chess. Like people have never taken taboo seriously.
Right.
But if you do, like there are strategies in taboo and you knowing how to do them increases your vocabulary dramatically. And so like, what's the opposite of this?
Oh.
Doubles your vocabulary instantly.
Very true.
I don't know the word for, and like you can stretch it. You can be like, what's the opposite of a teacher? And they're like, what?
Yeah.
Not teacher?
Yeah, right.
And you're like, no, the opposite of teacher. And they're like, student? And you're like, cool, yeah. And you're like, what's the opposite of cup? Right. And they're like, screw you. Like there's no opposite of cup. And you're like, no, cup. You got a cup and then the opposite. And they're like, water? You're like, thank you, cool, water. And you move up. Like, you can force opposite to do all sorts of cool things. So what's the opposite of is sort of my next favorite. I'm okay with, asking for translations. Like, what's the English word for? Yeah. What's the Spanish word for? Blah.
Yeah.
I think that's a legit move. You're allowed to do that thing. Two more. Let's see. I know how to name things and say, what's that? I know how to get the opposites of things. This is kind of like opposites, but not, because it lets you do a list. You're like, not water, not orange juice, not Pepsi.
But
and then they can fill in your list for you. And so it's kind of a stretched version of opposites. So I like that one.
What's not?
Yeah, what's it's not, and then a list. Like, what's not this, this, and this.
Mm-hmm.
Last one. Tricky.
What about where? Do you think that's important? Where is, or not so much?
I feel like we don't actually talk about locations as much as is highlighted in language schools. There's so much about like, get the directions, left, right. And it's so hard. And like, how often are you on the street asking for directions? Like, yes, more when you're traveling, it's true.
Of course, sure.
But also like nowadays, you tend to GPS your way around. I don't know how to interpret directions when I'm getting them in English. Like,
right.
If someone's like, oh, it's down by the old windmill. You just go north and then south, and then you turn right, left. Yeah. Like, I don't know what to do with that.
I know. It's like, dude, do I need like a compass for the north, south thing? I mean, come on.
That.
that part.
I don't know if I'm going to find a fifth one that's like the one, but I have to. So let's figure out one. Maybe like it's just giving something an attribute. So it's like this.
Okay.
I'm looking for a word, and it's blue, and it's like, mm-hmm. it's like water.
Yeah.
It's like water, but black. And they're like, oh, yeah. Coke.
Yeah. I do that in English. Like, oh no, it's kind of like this, but not really. That. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. That's very useful. Okay. Well done. The last question is called the Fab Five, and it is the signature podcast question because every guest gets this question. It is always the last question. So most people are like, finally, the last question. I ask a lot of questions because I'm naturally curious about people, and I love hearing about, you know, people's, just the way people's brains work. I love your brain. So it's been many questions, but I've had a good time. I hope you have also.
This has been great. You ask good questions.
Thank you. Well, this is the last question, the Fab Five. And the question is, what are your top five recommendations for living a beautiful and fabulous life? Now, this could be completely holistic. It could have nothing to do with learning about languages. It's just your top five tips for living your most beautiful and fabulous life ever. And I write these down because these go on social, darling.
Oh, man. Okay.
Yeah, pressure's on.
Go to therapy.
Okay.
Go to therapy. Go to couples therapy as a separate one. Mm-hmm. The amount of my work at this point, like I've stepped away from Fluent Forever full time, and I've been doing consulting. I would say 95% of my work at this point is some form of couples counseling. And I would say that was the case when I was CEO of my company as well. It was just, how do you navigate people? How do you help people feel seen, feel heard? How do you do that?
Yeah.
I feel like couples counseling is a huge toolkit for literally every interaction you have with anyone. So couples counseling, regardless of whether you feel like you need it, like you do need it, go get couples counseling.
Yeah.
So therapy. Learn a good snickerdoodle recipe.
What is a snickerdoodle?
A snickerdoodle is a cinnamon cookie that is made with cream of tartar, so it like flattens and therefore becomes really chewy in the center, but really crunchy on the outside. And it is a magical cookie. And the number of people that will suddenly be like, wait, you know how to make those? Can I have more of those? Can we hang out? is not a small number.
And can it be made gluten-free? I'm totally gluten-free.
Oh, tricky.
Yeah, tricky.
I don't see why not. Like, flour is going to be more glutinous and work better for that thing. But, like, I don't see why you shouldn't be able to figure out a gluten-free snickerdoodle recipe that is not still quite good.
Okay, I'm on it. Yeah. All right, what's your number four?
Number four. We got the therapy. We got snickerdoodle. this is about how to live a fabulous life.
Yeah, I mean, you could include Norbert if you'd like.
I mean, dog does a good thing. I think to the extent that you can surround yourself, to the extent that you can be intentionally out in some manner, whatever that means for you, with the people that you're with, I think that does a lot. I think to the extent that you need to put masks over yourself to be in the world, I think it means you're holding secrets in you. And I think it stifles you from being able to connect to people genuinely.
So is that about being your authentic self?
it is about being your authentic self, but it's trying to figure out what are the pieces of you that you feel like you need to hide and questioning that. Do you in fact need to do that?
Got it. Okay, I like that. And your last
one. I think the last one is a sort of more abstract version of the same thing, which is that it's actually the next book I'm writing with my co-author. There is a thing called abstraction in the world. We'll need to come up with a shorter way to do this because it's not, you know, get to put on social this giant paragraph. But we run in abstractions. We name things such as this is a marriage, this is a podcast, this is a book, this is a friendship. And we make assumptions about what that means because we have to, trying to detail every single, what does a friendship do? What does a friendship do tomorrow? What does a friendship do in 5 minutes? Like, what's the, you know, what is every little rule about being in a friendship? Like, we don't have enough time in the day to detail every single bit of every single thing.
Right.
You say, I drive to work. That involves 50,000 steps, but you say I drive to work because that's plenty for right now.
Right.
But every one of those abstractions, every one of those names that you've named something, it's just shorthand, and no one actually, there's no rules about that thing.
Right.
And so when you actually take some time to question those assumptions, those names, and say, hey, like, yeah, we all got this script for what a marriage is, what a friendship is, what a computer is, what a drive to work is. Mm-hmm. But that's useful for right now, but maybe it's not useful for tomorrow. And so question the names in your life. Question whether you need them today. And I think that, for me, has been really, really powerful for the last few years.
Got it. I like it. I've written those down. My gosh, Gabe, this has been absolutely fascinating. And we're on we're up to our hour. I wish I could talk to you some more. You are always welcome to come back and tell us about your next book and the next iteration of your app or whatever you decide to put your beautiful brain to. So thank you for your presence, your insight, your innovation. Thank you for your time on the Forever Fab podcast. Merci. What can I say? Gracias. Grazie. Spasiba. That's all I got.
Thank you for having me. This is fun. You ask great questions, and like this is fabulous.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so very, very much. And this brings us to our close of this week's episode of the Forever Fab podcast with my illustrious guest, Gabriel Weiner.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Forever Fab, the podcast on fashion, the art of living, and all things beauty, curated by Dr. Shirley Madeer, MD. Live beautifully and help make the world a more beautiful place.